This is Talking Business.
I'm joined now by Alan Waddell, who's the founder and CEO, co-CEO, of a business called Kablamo. What does Kablamo do, Alan?
Well pronounced. Oftentimes I get Kablamo, so kudos. I feel like I should say hello, Al, because it's not often I talk to other Al's. And everyone remembers that old golf advertisement. Anyway, Kablamo. So Kablamo is a software engineering company for cloud. We focus primarily on the ASX sort of top 200 and doing things a bit differently to the big sort of consultancies of old, where we work in very small pizza teams delivering software, as opposed to sort of the very broad brush approach taken by some of the larger guys.
Right. So what sort of clients do you work with mainly?
Oh, look, it's enterprise and media typically. So banks, fintechs, the major broadcasters. That they're our typical kind of our typical niche. And we have quite a lot of history in the media space. Yeah.
Yeah. When did you start the business?
Mate, it was back in 2011 initially, but the latest iteration of Kablamo is actually 2 years old. So that is a full service that we offer to our clients. And given that we spend a lot of time connecting enterprise customers to their data, this topic around AI and machine learning is really relevant to what we do day in, day out.
When you say relevant, do you mean you are in the business of doing AI programs?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think when you think about AI is really today a way to wrap some predictive analytics into your customer offering. So you think about what's possible and how the cloud vendors today, the big guys, are commoditizing AI services. They now offer things like, video recognition. So the ability to process a video and understand who's in the frame, so what the name of the person is, what all the objects around them are, what the sentiment is of the conversation being held, and then be able to drag out all of the text, speech to text, basically. And that's using a lot of training over a substantial amount of time to ensure these algorithms are quite accurate in what they build. So we use that to help companies, for example, decorate the data sets for their video. So you can think about if a major broadcaster pushed out a day's worth of programming, we could run all of that through this recognition programs and draw out a lot of information that's really powerful for searching and for an author to create some really interesting content from.
Right. So are you doing that now?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, are you kind of processing broadcast TV? I mean, are you working for TV companies now and sort of putting their broadcast through what you might call this data processing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, we work with a number of the big media companies to help generate that information for them to make it searchable. So you can think about the way the media company, think about how much content these guys have. I mean, you're talking about, thousands of hours of content sitting on reels and tapes in paddocks because it's so expensive to encode it and search it manually. Being able to take that content and digitize it and then be able to, use these algorithms to pick out meaningful information is hugely powerful for them. So, I think it's not a non-trivial amount of work to take a broadcast company and get it to that spot where everything is digitized and searchable. But they're all on that journey. How can they create? How can they get access to that archive of information? Because there's amazing stuff that is just sitting in, like I said, warehouses, and it's very expensive to store right now. So very common, yeah.
So to what extent you're involved in data security now?
Yeah, data security is, access to confidential personal information is absolutely a hot topic, not just from how it's stored and how it's transmitted, but how you're preventing it from attack or from theft as well. So we're heavily involved. As I said, we focus really heavily on connecting those customers to their data. So it's imperative that you have the right postures in place to and processes in place and governance in place to ensure that is done in a hugely securitized manner. Oftentimes, we'll be consulting to the large guys to help them understand modern best practices on cloud, because cloud is a very new domain for anyone in that ASX top 200 space, and being able to keep their businesses nimble and responding to change, need to find a way to do that security at speed, because traditionally making things secure had almost an exponential cost associated with it. So it's about how can we build in automated practices to help scale that security practice across an organization. So basically using machines.
So do you think that the world is going to have to change the way it does things to some extent to encompass artificial intelligence? I mean, I'm thinking in particular of Stephen Hawking and people like Elon Musk and so on warning that AI is really going to be dangerous. And that we have to worry about it, and also privacy. I mean, those two things.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure
how they fit in
exactly. In what ways AI is going to be dangerous? Obviously, it's replacing people's employment, but it's also, I think those of us who've watched Terminator 2 and so on worry about AI taking over the world.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there does seem to be – I mean, so do you think that AI is going to be a challenge for the world?
Look, that's a very broad question, so I'll try and answer it the best I can. Look, I don't believe so. I don't believe so. I mean, I'm more worried about overpopulation on Mars than I am about the coming of the evil AI. I think we look to AI as something that's going to assist society, not necessarily, take it over. It has its catches and it has its faults. I think there's some examples in that article I wrote in The Australian, is your computer, a racist? And it's very much around talking to how do we manage a data bias in an algorithm or an algorithmic bias in an algorithm. So biasing towards a sex or a gender or a race, creating segmentation in society. So I think, being able to have the right controls in place to ensure that doesn't happen at scale is absolutely mandatory. So, that could be, there's numerous ways in which to do that, but there's a huge wealth of study going into ensuring that bias is called out. So, there's examples there where, for example, there's a system in the US called Compass, which basically its point was to assess the risk associated with offenders reoffending. Now, what was happening is for almost an unknown reason, the reason is data bias effectively, but it was marking races, particularly people with dark skin, at a very high chance of reoffending versus the Caucasian counterparts being very low. So we have to be very cautious about how we create these algorithms and then what data are we feeding, into those engines to make sure we're getting, getting results that aren't biased in those ways. Now, in terms of, when I think about are we going to have a Terminator D-Day, there's something about how, if you look at our evolution, over the last 7 million years, we've, our brains have, tripled in size. Now, in the last, 2 million years, they've doubled. In the last 10,000 years, our brains have actually shrunk. So, and that's arguably where the most human development has occurred. So there's something to be said for it's as much about your brain is only as powerful as the problems it needs to solve. So as we've become, as society's kind of evolved and our challenges for survival have diminished, we've become what we are today. Now, the same can be said for AI. As the processing power increases and these services become commoditized and everyone's consuming them for various different activities, as the power increases, really they can only get as complex as the problems they need to solve. Now, in society today, that's about as much as what we have. So there's an argument saying that, yes, although the computing power is going to be powerful enough to solve great problems at speed, is it going to be much smarter than us as humans? That's very hard to say. But what we do know is that there's something which Elon Musk and various other commentators refer to as a singularity. Now, this is a point in 2040 where we're saying that computers will be smart enough to improve themselves. So it's taken a long time in the field of AI to get to that point, but perceivably it will be exponential from that point forwards as to how much smarter they get and how much faster they get. So if it's, for example, if it takes, if it's taken 100 years to get to that singularity, you know, to get to 100% of a human capacity, basically. From that point forwards, it'll, in the next, you know, very short years, in a matter of time, will quickly, you know, rise to, say, 400%, of what we would consider human capacity. So going forwards from there, there is an open question saying, well, we don't actually know, but we do see it as a benefit to society and not a risk. Like I said, I'm more concerned, you know, with how long the tram line in Sydney is taking to complete than whether or not I'm going to have a robot on my doorstep holding a weapon.
So we probably should explain that reference you said before about, is your computer a racist?
Yep.
It was an article that you actually wrote.
Yes.
That was in The Australian in March this year.
Yes.
And the headline one was, is your computer a racist?
Yep.
We know AIs, how, but we need why.
That's right.
So what were you on about in that piece? Explain it to us.
What we're doing was we're exploring that, you know, in AI, it's possible to bias your algorithms. It's possible to have some pretty, you know, dire results if they're not measured, if it's not quantified what they're doing. So there's an example, you know, from Mount Sinai. They developed a neural network called Deep Patient, and they populated it with 700,000 records of blood samples, which enabled them to do things like predict with a single sample from a human what their likelihood of physical illness was, for example, you know, liver disease or heart disease. Now, what they didn't expect is that it became really accurate at predicting mental disorders, at schizophrenia, at depression, and at anxiety. It was scarily accurate. So it exceeded the human capability to pick up to be able to detect these diseases, and so they can't point at why. So some of the theory here is that, well, if we can't understand how it's, you know, rationalizing or what it's rationalizing, it makes it very difficult to guard against the future. There's an argument that says, you know, when computers get smart enough, what happens if they actually lie back to us? So the tests, you know, could come back very much true, that they are honest, they are doing, you know, things that are best for society, because that's what the AI wants you to see, and therefore could perceivably break that trust and do some scary things. This article
that does sound like a bit of a problem. I must say.
Yes. Potentially a problem. But like I say, there are studies in place, equal studies are in place to resolve these bias issues. Now, I don't think, you know, I think that, like, the algorithmic bias conversation, you know, I think is very much in hand around how we write algorithms to counter, you know, any of that bias. The data one is the part that is scary. Now, I'm more concerned with technical stupidity than I am with technical eliteness that would generate, you know, a really smart AI. Enterprise today, for example, if you talk about data bias, being able to aggregate a data source to funnel information into these systems is a long way away. An enterprise today has information spread across a myriad of legacy platforms. I saw a study where they said in 2015, one of the government bodies spent 77% of its budget on legacy infrastructure. Now, that infrastructure means it's not ripe to be used to data mine to power, for example, a really smart AI algorithm. There's a lot of work in there, a lot of investment that's going to be taken or applied to rectify, you know, security and networking and system choice and data structures and all those sorts of technical things that then need to be, which then make it capable to be able to power a really smart decision system like, backed by AI. So the problem here really is looking at an enterprise and going, you know, first of all, how do we get your data into a place that can be used? Non-trivial amount of work, and then how can we make really smart decisions with that data to help better the consumers? So if we look at, if we think about how AI is evolving, and we think, you know, if we look at, you know, I think the dates are something like 2029 when, AI is meant to pass the Turing test. And the Turing test is basically being able to have a conversation with a computer and not know you're talking to a computer. So from there forwards, you know, for us to get to that point, we really need to clean up the legacy issues that we have, you know, across, you know, that span of enterprise. Particularly if the enterprise wants to stay, you know, nimble in market and be able to react to customers, specific businesses popping up to challenge their traditional ways of working and the traditional product offerings.
We're going to have to leave it there, Alan. It's been really interesting to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me. Great to meet you.
I've been talking to Alan Waddell, who's the founder and co-CEO of Coblamo.